fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Some of the world's top tennis players are here in Washington this week for the City Open Hardcourt Tournament. As my VOA colleague Gwen Uten reported on Monday's show, 15-year-old American Coco Gauff is getting a lot of attention in the USA's capital city after Coco's surprising run at last month's Wimbledon in London. Coco upset Venus Williams in the first round at Wimbledon and advanced to the fourth round, where she lost to eventual champion Simona Halep. Meanwhile, a young player from South Africa, 22-year-old Lloyd Harris, is off to a good start here in Washington. Harris rallied to win his first round match against Lithuania's Ricardas Berankis in three sets. The final score from the William H. G. Fitzgerald Tennis Center in Washington's Rock Creek Park, 4-6, 6-3, and 6-1. Now, the 29-year-old Berankis has 8 more years professional experience than Harris, as well as a higher ranking, 78th in the world, compared with Harris's number 85. Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel caught up with Lloyd Harris after his first-round victory here in Washington and asked him, how were you able to overcome a more experienced opponent?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough match today. I mean, obviously I went down that first set, and he's been around for a while, so it's not easy to turn it around. But I think I just really started, you know, believing more in my game and going after the shots I wanted to, started serving really well, playing a little bit more aggressive, putting a little bit more balls in the court, and, you know, that helped me through today.
Yeah, you mentioned your serve. At the beginning of the match, you seemed to be struggling to get your serves in, but then you got into a groove. How did you make that adjustment?
Yeah, I mean, I found the rhythm. I feel like I was trying to force it too much, you know, trying to go for the too many big serves. And then all of a sudden, when I just relaxed and went for the rhythm, I started hitting them really well, and it came together. I think I served a bunch of aces and a high percentage, so I was happy with that second and third set.
If you continue your strong week here at City Open, you could get a career high ranking. What would you attribute to your continuing improvement?
It's just constant work. You know, from the clay to the grass to the back to the hard, it's just continuously trying to develop my game to play, compete against the top guys, get on all surfaces. You know, it's just putting the work in on and off the court. You know, it doesn't just end in the tennis court. There's a lot of extra elements, and I think I've just been more professional about everything that goes about with being a tennis player.
You're one of two South Africans here at this tournament, the other being, of course, Kevin Anderson. Do you think that you and Kevin are helping to grow the sport of tennis in South Africa?
For sure. I think so. I mean, if you look at South Africa, I mean, there's a lot of kids. They all look up to us. You know, Kevin's done some incredible things, reaching 2 Grand Slam finals. So there's a lot there. And I'm still living in South Africa and still training there. So I think I attract, you know, a whole nother a crowd over there as well, and I think we're both very good role models for them. We're both hard-working players, and I think we're trying to set a good tone and trying to get more African players to come through.
Last question, any thoughts on your next opponent, Kyle Edmund?
He's a great player. I played him one time before. It was a tough match, so I know it's going to be very difficult. But, you know, I'm very, very optimistic about what I can do, and I'm just looking forward to the challenge, and hopefully we can both play some good tennis.
That's South African tennis player Lloyd Harris. And Lloyd was talking with Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel at the City Open tournament here in Washington. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations, or SACAFA, was represented by 4 teams at the recent Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Egypt. Burundi, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda sported the SACAFA banner, as well as their national colors. Burundi qualified for the first time for the African football showpiece, while Kenya and Tanzania returned after long absences. Of the 4 SACAFA teams, Uganda was the only one to reach the knockout round of 16, where the Ugandan Cranes lost to Nations Cup finalist Senegal 1-0. Ugandan football officials are confident they will qualify again for the 2021 Nations Cup in Cameroon. Magumi Davis Rakawinj in Kampala has this report on the chances of CECAFA teams making it to Cameroon 2021.
Ahmed Hussein, the spokesperson of Uganda Football Association, OFUFA, says Uganda has more than 70% chances of qualifying for the AFCON 2021 finals. He says the federation will put in place all the requirements for the team to qualify.
By November, when we play our first game away, we should be in position to have a new coach to handle this game away. Of course, our away matches have been a bit tricky, but for the last 4 years or five or so, a lot has improved. We put up a mechanism to make sure that no stone is left unturned, especially when we play away matches. So that by the time we get to the home fixtures at home, it's as easy as maybe making a trip to the middle of the park of any football pitch.
Hussein says FUFA will avail bonuses and other incentives for the Uganda Cranes players so they can have a successful campaign. Uganda will begin the qualifiers away in Ouagadougou against Burkina Faso in November. Uganda sports journalist Baker Cynthia Nachmera says Uganda was placed in what she describes as an easy group. She says the Uganda Cranes in Group B alongside Burkina Faso, Malawi and a winner between South Sudan and Seychelles, boast of vast experience having participated at the two AFCON finals for two times in a row.
I think Uganda has a very big advantage because of the, you know, season, the good season it has exhibited right in the Uganda Premier League, in AFCON, it has been on point. When you talk of Tanzania, it's tried on a club level. It has tried to reach the knockout stages. But when you look at the AFCON, the fact that they've been using the old squad, that is a problem, and I doubt if they will have a chance. Kenya is a bit organized. Burundi surprised us, you know. I think Burundi and Uganda have a chance.
Hamani Nyanzi, another sports reporter in Uganda, agrees. Nyanzi says the Tanzanians do not have a pedigree against the North African opponents.
I think this is a very difficult group for Tanzania because when you look at the CECAFA region, I find it always difficult when they face teams from Arab countries. And Tanzania, they were pitted with the two Arab countries in Tunisia and Libya.
Rwanda sports analyst Rush Mujisha says Rwanda's chances of sailing through are so minimal.
Rwanda going through Group F might be very tough, as you know. There hasn't been any showing by the Amavubi to show that they can actually do anything in any competition of late. So unless something happens drastically, then they can, maybe they can shock us, but I don't think they'll be able to move out of a group that has Cameroon and Mozambique and Cape Verde. They could actually stay at the bottom.
Mujisha says Ethiopia in Group K alongside Cote d'Ivoire, Madagascar and Niger could sail through. He also says Sudan in Group C won't make it against Ghana and South Africa. All these analysts contend the local federations must prepare their teams in time in all qualifying games for them to be able to qualify for the AFCON 2021. For the Sony side of sports, I am Magume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magume. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Dan Friedel is here today with a grab bag of sports nuggets to talk about. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. It's nice to be here. I feel like it's Superman and Clark Kent sometimes, in the sense that we're never in the same place at the same time, but it's good to be here in the studio with you today.
Good to have you back, Dan. Let's start off with some news from the world of athletics, where we saw some names pop up on the scoreboard that our VOA listeners might not be so familiar with at the recent USA Track and Field Championships in the Midwestern city of Des Moines, Iowa.
So, Sonny, you know, it's hard to believe that we're less than a year away from the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. And as you recall, when I came in to join you on the show back in April, we talked about how I was walking around Tokyo back in March. I went to a baseball game, and just next door from the Colt Swallows baseball stadium, they're working on the Tokyo Olympic Stadium complex that'll house the opening and closing ceremonies and the track and field events. So it's exciting to start to see some of the results coming out of the weekend and the previous week's competition in Iowa. And I'm looking forward to the Olympic trials, which would just be in June 2020 in Eugene, Oregon. That's one of America's big track and field cities.
Well, Dan, on the men's side, who are some of the American athletes you're excited to follow over the next year leading to Tokyo 2020?
So, Sonny, I'm looking forward to following the progress of two runners who kind of have a little rivalry going. That's Noah Lyles, who was born in Florida but grew up just about 15 kilometers from the VOA studios in Alexandria, Virginia. So some of our listeners might remember the movie with Denzel Washington from about 20 years ago called Remember the Titans. It was about a newly integrated high school and the high school football team having a mix of black players and white players that hadn't been playing together before. Well, that school was T.C. Williams, and that's the school that Lyles attended in high school, where he set a number of youth records and won a number of titles at events like the Pan American Junior Championships and the World Under 20 Championships in the 100 meters and the 200 meters and the sprint relays. The other men's runner is Michael Norman. He's a 21-year-old sprinter from Southern California. And 3 years ago, as just a high school senior, Norman made a name for himself when he defeated former U.S. champion Justin Gatlin in a semifinal heat of the 200 meters at the Olympic trials leading into the Rio Olympics. So while Norman missed out on the Olympics, he's been running in professional events like the IAAF Diamond League for about a year. So rewind a little while back, about 2 months, Noah Lyles actually lost to Norman in the 200-meter finals in Rome on June 6th, with Norman running a personal best of 19.70 seconds to barely beat Lyles. And then before the recent Diamond League event in Switzerland in early July, Lyles said that after he lost to Norman in that event, he was excited. Now, you wouldn't think that losing would be exciting, but Lyles made the point that he appreciated having the challenge from Norman, and he's glad to have the competition not only on the national but the world stage.
Dan, you mentioned that IAAF meet in Switzerland, the Diamond League meet. Can you tell our VOA listeners what happened there in Lausanne?
So Sonny, all Noah Lyles did was go out and run the fastest 200 meters in the world since Usain Bolt ran 19.32 seconds in 2012. So that's easily the fastest time of 2019. He went 19 and a half seconds to win that race. The last American, interestingly, to run a 200 meters under 19:50 was actually Michael Johnson, who set the then world record at the Atlanta Olympics in 1996.
That's pretty good company, Dan. Michael Johnson and Usain Bolt. Let's fast forward a couple more weeks to the USA Track and Field Championships, Dan. How did these runners do in Des Moines?
So the runners really decided to stick with their specialties, as you would assume in the national championship meet. So Norman and Lyles didn't match up. Norman finished second in the 400-meter finals to 24-year-old Fred Curley, who specializes in the 400 meters. And he should also prove to be one of the top American athletes at next year's Olympics in Japan. Curley won three times in the 400 meters in 2018 during the Diamond League circuit, and he also won earlier this year at that distance. So on the Lyles side, he ran 19.78, which I guess is a little bit slow for him, but he easily won the national title by about a quarter second. So, Sonny, I'll tell you, I'm getting excited to follow these American male athletes as we get ready for 2020.
I'm getting excited too, Dan. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with sports reporter and occasional Sunny Side of Sports host Dan Friedel about the recent USA Track and Field Championships in Iowa. Dan, sort of a climactic moment in Iowa on Sunday in one of the final events that came out of the women's 400-meter hurdles. Tell our VOA listeners about that.
So, yeah, that's Delilah Muhammad. She's a 29-year-old. She grew up in Queens, New York. She went to college at the University of Southern California, and she's been a pro for about 5 years. She specializes in the hurdles, and so she should be known to our listeners who follow athletics because she's the defending gold medalist from the Olympics. She won the gold medal in Rio 3 summers ago. She also won the U.S. title 2 years ago. And then on Sunday, she did something huge. She broke the world record in the 400-meter hurdles, clocking a time of 52.20 seconds, even on a rainy track. What do you think about that, Sonny?
I mean, footing is so important in athletics. I would think that you're not quite as confident on a rainy track.
Yeah, you look at the videos, and it's kind of like watching the Kentucky Derby or something like that. You think, how can these horses get their best times on a wet track? But some of these American runners, including Delilah Muhammad, really put in their best races of their career. And after the race, she told the Des Moines Register, the local newspaper, she said, "The world record, man, I'm just shocked. I don't think it's hit me yet." So it turns out that she broke a 16-year-old record that had been held by Russia's Yulia Petronkina by about an eighth of a second. Now, so, Sonny, some of the time these athletes have like a run that they can't believe and that they can't replicate, but it turns out Muhammad really thought she had a chance to break the record at the Drake University Stadium because she had been running in the 52.20s during training. And so she said, you know, her coach told her she just had to run the last straightaway really well. And she said she was hoping for it all weekend, and she pulled it off. It's really a pretty amazing story. You know, once in a generation kind of result. And we'll be looking for Delilah Muhammad at the World Championships coming up in Qatar. The top three athletes in each specialty qualified for the World Championships coming up in the fall. So it's really exciting to follow these outstanding athletes as they move forward into the Olympic season, which really probably begins with the World Championships coming up in a couple months.
It's almost as if the World Championships are an appetizer for Tokyo.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, you know, how did we hear about some of these huge athletes that we've known, you know, like Usain Bolt and Caster Semenya? You know, they made their mark in the World Championships in the fall, and then 9 or 10 months later, we heard about them again leading up to the Olympics. So I'm looking forward to the next 12 or 11 months in the world of athletics.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with sports reporter Dan Friedel. Dan, let's turn our attention to a sporting event taking place this week right here in Washington, D.C., the City Open Hard Court Tennis Tournament, and it's getting a lot of attention from media, not just here in Washington, but all across the country and even outside the United States because of a young African-American tennis player. What can you tell us about Coco Gauff?
So, as you mentioned earlier, and our colleague Gwen Uten has reported that Corey Gauff, she's 15 years old. She's known as Coco. She was, you know, earlier this year, she was just an outstanding young tennis player making her way up the ranks. You know, nobody really expected that much from Coco Gauff. I mean, it kind of reminds me of Katie Ledecky, another athlete who is well known on the world stage now, but 5, 6, 7 years ago, Katie Ledecky was just like a young teenager who was going to be in the Olympic trials, I think leading into the London Olympics in 2012.
That's right.
Just like try it out, get her feet wet, literally and figuratively, with, you know, some of the big, big swimmers in the world, you know, be at the same meet with Michael Phelps and some of the outstanding American women that have won Olympic medals. And next thing you know, she qualifies for the Olympics as a young teenager and goes on to win a gold medal. So here we have Coco Gauff, who, you know, just kind of getting her feet wet on some of the big world stages. And she was going to go up against Venus Williams in Wimbledon just a month ago. And she beat Venus Williams. I mean, think about that. We know that Venus is on the backside of her career, but come on, an adult woman beating a teenager at Wimbledon, that's, you know, what you would expect. So the teenager coming out on top was pretty an amazing story.
Amazing indeed, Dan. Also kind of amazing in terms of their physiques. Coco kind of reminds a lot of people of Venus Williams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember in the late 90s when Venus was winning tournaments and everybody thought, gosh, you know, she's going to have an outstanding career. Who's ever going to beat Venus Williams? And then, of course, Serena burst onto the stage. We know that Serena was beating Venus. You know, it's obviously the physical attributes that these women have should set them up. You know, Coco Gauff should have the chance to only get stronger and only get faster, and her stamina should only increase. You know, she's got herself set up for a great career. She can keep going on this trajectory. So let's go back and, you know, she beat Venus in Wimbledon. She won two more matches, and like people like to talk about in sports, you know, if you lose in the playoffs to the team that eventually wins the championship, it kind of makes you feel better, right? So
that's right.
So that's, you know, like if the team loses in the AFC playoffs to the New England Patriots and the Patriots wind up winning the Super Bowl, you think, well, we lost to the champs. So Coco did lose to Simona Halep a couple matches later on center court, and that was really this shining moment, though, Wimbledon, for Coco Gauff. And you talk about social media these days. Coco said that she went from about 30,000 Instagram followers before Wimbledon to over 300,000 after.
Wow.
And
wow.
I think I have about 300 followers on Instagram. And she wound up getting messages from Michelle Obama and Solange Knowles. Now, Solange is the younger sister of megastar singer Beyonce.
Does Solange sing?
So, yeah, Solange is a good singer herself. She's got some big songs out there. She's well known. So in the story, Coco said, I'm getting closer and closer to Beyonce. I think that's pretty, you know,
like
once
that.
You get to be friends with Beyonce, you've arrived.
You made it. You made it.
So real quick, Sonny, Gauff plays in a couple hours later today against Zarina Diaz of Kazakhstan. Now, Coco is also playing in the doubles tournament, so there's going to be a lot of Coco Gauff this week in Washington, D.C. If Coco wins, she'll play her round two match against Lesya Sorenko of Ukraine. And potentially, if things advance, she could play against a fellow American, Sloane Stephens, in the quarterfinals.
Well, Dan, we have only about 30 seconds left in the show. Who are you watching on the men's side here in Washington?
Well, as we've talked about often on this show, we've got D.C. area native Francis Tiafoe in the tournament, Americans Jack Sock and John Isner. We heard about South Africa's Kevin Anderson, somebody who was really exciting to watch, even though he didn't make it to the semifinals last year, was Stefanos Tsitsipas of Greece. This is all part of the lead up to the U.S. Open coming up in a few weeks. And one of the other notable players in the tournament is Andy Murray, who's playing with his brother Jamie Murray in the doubles field. Andy Murray says he might play singles again after this career-threatening hip injury as soon as August 10th in Cincinnati.
Thanks, Dan. That's sports reporter Dan Friedel. And once again, this VOA programming note, Dan will be hosting the show on August 1st, August 2nd, and August 5th. And that wraps up the July 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to my producer this evening, Nadia Taha. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Host Carol Castiel sits down with Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, a Democrat who serves on the Homeland Security and Armed Services Committees. Slotkin offers her views on a range of foreign policy and national security issues, including rising tensions between Iran and the United States, the need for election security, and prospects for ending the Afghan war, among other pressing issues. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika resigned nearly 3 months ago. Algerians still yearn for fundamental systemic change. What will the future of Algeria look like? And what are the impediments to a more stable and prosperous Libya? Thomas Hill, Senior Program Officer for North Africa at USIP, joins host Carol Castiel and Jeffrey Young for an update on Algeria and Libya. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
Had a tough week? Need to relax or recharge? Well, this Sunday, let the sweet sound of African music restore and revive you. All my ladies. Hi, everyone. I'm Heather Maxwell. Inside this edition of Music Time in Africa, get a taste of what Afrofest and Midafrique, Canada's biggest African music festivals, are going to sound like this month. I've got music by some of the biggest headliners. There's also traditional music, vintage sounds from the new MTIA archive, and a hot rhythm that's firing up the Black Stars of Ghana football team and its fans at the Africa Cup of Nations. You just gotta tune in this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Relax, recharge on Music Time in Africa.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
Listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. Next up, a conversation with Farah Pandit, former diplomat and expert in countering violent extremism and author of the new book, How We Win, How Cutting-Edge Entrepreneurs, Political Visionaries, Enlightened Business Leaders, and Social Media Mavens Can Defeat the Extremist Threat. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Host Carol Castiel talks with Brown University political science professor Melvin Rogers, currently a visiting scholar at the Library of Congress's Kluge Center, about his recent book-length project titled The Darkened Light of Faith, Race, Democracy, and Freedom in African-American Political Thought. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
We'll be right back. This is the